Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Why, thank you, Dave. It is a beautiful day in Baltimore. Oh, I wish you were here with me in my extended kitchen area, which is where I conduct the show. Beautiful day. So glad you could join me. A wonderful day to hear all sorts of hybrid jazz. Mercy. And you know what? I'm just so excited because here it is, the end of January. This is January 31st. And we're looking at this new month of February, looking at the guests that have been here, looking at the guests coming up. My goodness. Roy Cross on Thursday, a multimedia artist who's just astounding. He's got a big show coming up. We've got Kevin Tony on the way, who has written a book called The Virtuous Man. I can't wait. Ken Navarro and I just spoke the other day, and he's going to be here on the first day of spring, later on in March. And then we're going to have two of the members of Afro Blue a little bit later on in February. Lots of things going on, and lots of things going on today. Bob Jacobson, one of the board of director members of the Baltimore Jazz Alliance, who has been a social worker, who has been a writer, saxophone player, and he's coming up next hour. But thought I'd give you some June babies, and this is one we miss terribly. Dexter Gordon. We always like to start off with a classic. This is Cheesecake from Go on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Woohoo! Thank you.
beat up little seagulls on a marble stair, trying to find the ocean, looking everywhere. Hard times in the city, in a hard town by the sea. Ain't nowhere to run to, there ain't nothing here for free. Hooker on the corner, she's waiting for the train. Drunk lying on the sidewalk, he's sleeping in the rain. And they hide their faces, and they hide their eyes, 'cause the city's dying, and they don't know why. Ah, Baltimore, man, it's hard just to live. Ah, Baltimore, man, it's hard just to live, just to live. Get my sister Sandy and my little brother Ray. Gonna get a big old wagon, haul us all away. We're living in the country, where the mountains high. I ain't never coming back. Get my sister Sandy, oh, my little brother Ray. Buy a big old wagon to take us all away. Live out in the country, where the mountains high. I ain't never coming back.
On Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, when I say the incredible Rosanna Vitro, I mean it to the nth degree. Rosanna was on Cool Jazz Conversations last night with Joy Hall and myself, and we were just stunned. Honestly, all you have to do is do any research on Rosanna and find out what she has done for education, her workshops, her clinics, her career. She has done so much, and now she is reaping the benefit of all that she has done, because you just heard her sing Baltimore, a song very close to my heart, of course, from the music of Randy Newman. Rosanna is up for a Grammy for Best Vocal Jazz Performance for that compilation disc. And let me tell you something, Randy Newman is so excited, he's jumping out of his skin. He might be more excited about Rosanna up for this Grammy than all of the awards he has won, and there have been a considerable few of them. Rosanna Vitro, oh my goodness, such a pleasure to play such a professional. Can't say enough about her. So tickled to know her now. Scott Allman we heard from. Now, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned to you that we're going to have some really cool people on for the month of February. If I, maybe I shouldn't say this. I think it's confirmed that Scott Allman is going to be my special Valentine's Day guest. I can't think of a better work to showcase for you than what he has done with Generations, featuring Darren Ron on sax, by the way. Scott doing his keyboard work so meticulously, so passionately. He's going to have a CD release party on the 10th of March at the Two Brothers Roundhouse in Aurora, Illinois. It's close to Chicago where Scott lives. But I was tickled to find out that Scott is a University of Pennsylvania grad, 1994, Master of Architecture. Now, you talk about a Renaissance guy. Not only is he amazing as far as music is concerned, but if you look up ethoworkshop.com, you will find out that he is the president of his own architecture company. Unbelievable. Scott Allman, we'll be talking to him in the next few weeks. Dexter Gordon, Lord have mercy, a giant in the industry in more ways than one. 6 foot six, yeah. Cheesecake from the late 1962, actually late summer of 1962 release called Go, which some consider one of the best jazz albums of all time. Dexter himself thought of it as his finest hour. So amazing on that tenor sax, so copied, cited as one of the most influential people in others' careers that I can possibly think of. Cool thing is, you talk about a small world, this album was re-released in 1999 as part of the RVG series on Blue Note, RVG standing for Rudy Van Gelder, the filet mignon of engineers. It was put out by Michael Cascuna, who is known for this kind of thing. Michael, one of the original rock jocks on a station in Philadelphia, WMMR. So I knew about Michael Cascuna back in the days when he was a rock guy, but man, did he get involved with remastering and reissuing a lot of these absolute chestnuts. On piano, on that particular work, Cheesecake, Philadelphia, you know I have to do something right. Sonny Clark on piano, Butch Warren on bass, Billy Higgins on drums. Dexter Gordon, born February 27th, 1923, died in Philadelphia. Yeah, that's why I'm sighing. April 25th, 1990. Talk about some kind of career. And this is just an aside. I know I've mentioned this, but I think this is so sweet. Dexter had had some trouble in his life. If you do any kind of search for him, you'll know what I'm talking about. This particular album on Blue Note was released just before his self-imposed exile, mostly in Paris and in Denmark. While in Copenhagen, he befriended quite a few people, had some children. One of the families he befriended was the family of Lars Ulrich from Metallica, and he is, the late now godfather of Lars. So Lars has that on his resume, I'm sure. Dexter Gordon was my godfather. Amazing music, and more on the way. And don't forget, Bob Jacobson comes your way next hour. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to a lot of really good surprises to tell you, too. Joshua Redman, another one of these folks who has a birthday in February, as a matter of fact, tomorrow, along with Joe Sample, who you'll hear in just a little bit. Joshua Redman, oh, there's so much to say about him. Let's just get to something from his Compass CD, shall we? This is Uncharted on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. Now, you all know that when I started this little venture, it was going to be all about hybrid. Man, is that ever. It's just amazing what you find out that folks may not necessarily know names in the United States, but they are so revered in other countries that when you mention the name Hanitra to someone in Madagascar, they go, oh, I mean, there's a sharp intake of breath. This woman has been playing music since she was 7 years old. Of course, she didn't have notoriety young, but she really did start at a young age with a group called Lolo Sini Tarini, and they were huge in Madagascar. Hanitra's last name is Renevo. And the album from 2000, you heard Haba Kabaka from the new voice of Madagascar, Omika Oneo. Hanitra is just so amazing because, first of all, when you look at what is inside the CD, the booklet that you usually get, it's multilingual. She wants to explain to people in her native language and also in English and in French and in Spanish what each song means. And Haba Kabaka is about a young girl leaving her home to continue her education. She falls in love and in so doing breaks the bond with her father. Amazing stuff. If you go to Hanitra.com, you're going to have a little bit of trouble trying to make out what exactly all of her story means, because it was originally done in French, which I believe is where Hanitra makes her home now. This album is from 2000. And apparently she was away for a while at one point, went back after 15 years, and without a whole lot of promotion, she was just amazing that the country went wild for her. She has a really unique style about her, and I heard just today that she played the Zinc Bar in New York just late last month. So maybe there's some hope that she will be coming to the States. I hope so. She's really very cool. Randy Everett is somebody who is just a trip and a half. If you go to randyeverett.net, you are going to be tripping too. You heard the title track from his CD, My Flying Dream. Randy Everett is a multimedia artist born in Newton, Mississippi, self-taught piano at 9, composing shortly thereafter, guitar at 14. He was determined to get his own, so he worked summers to get his own guitar. At 17, his parents bought him a makeshift recording studio. He has been doing that ever since. You'll see his incredible artwork and what he has done. You might not know about Randy Everett, but let me tell you, other folks do. His studio, Terminal Recording Studios, has garnered 5 Grammys and 8 Grammy nominations. Amazing. Just a little kid from Mississippi whose influences were as vast as Jimi Hendrix, John Coltrane, Wes Montgomery, Mahavishnu Orchestra. He assembled all of that work. When you hear the body of work on My Flying Dream, you think that it was recorded somehow, some way in Europe. But no, he's just a kid from the States, and I think the studio, he's going to be here as a guest. He'll be telling us all about it. I believe he's based in Montreal. I'm just getting to know Randy, who looks a little bit like Edgar Winter, by the way. So it adds to the mystery of his background and his music. Amazing. As is Joshua Redman. Happy birthday tomorrow to Joshua. Love the background on this man. My goodness. His dad, Dewey Redman, a great jazz saxophonist, born in Berkeley, Joshua was. His mom, Renee Shedroff. Joshua had both African-American and Jewish roots from mom and dad. Plus, he got that jazz in his blood from his dad and exposure to multicultural music from both parents, multi-genres, as well as multi-instrumentation. Cannonball, Coltrane, Ornette Coleman, Prince, The Police, Indian, Indonesian, Middle Eastern, I should say, music. So all of that comes out to be this pretty much straight-ahead jazz guy who's just amazing to watch on that saxophone. He's really not intimidating, but charismatic. I don't mean to say he's scary, but there's something about him that's just really amazing. And he did this particular album, Compass, on a 3-day stretch back in 2008 at a studio called Avatar. And my goodness, seeing the movie Avatar makes me understand that that particular track, Uncharted, really kind of comes to life after you know all that information. He's just amazing. Joe Sample, another birthday guy tomorrow. Joe will be 73. Hallelujah. And we're going to dip back 1979 or so. How about that? One of the best CDs ever. Carmel, all about his love affair with Carmel, California. My goodness. Title track here, Joe Sample and Bob Jacobson coming your way at the top of next hour. He's going to be telling us about his jazz journey. We love to hear them. Here Joe is on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you. self-obsessed. The other rules you can muster. She's a fluster.
Idea the history of that song. 1971, Boz Scaggs. William Royce Boz Scaggs, nicknamed Bosley in his private school, which was shortened to Boz. Downright Women from his Moments CD, or album, or LP, if you will. Oh my. Boz Scaggs. That was a song playing in the background during a particular time during my Temple University years, my first real love. That song was playing in the background, and I have to be really careful because he's on Facebook and was once a very high-powered executive in the television industry, so I can't even allude to his first name. But I know that he'll never forget, and either will I. Oh, my. Got to fan myself a little bit. From Texas to London to San Francisco, Boss Gags. You know, I don't have to tell you about him, do I? Oh, my goodness. Friends with Steve Miller at an early age. He's going to be 68 this year and just has done everything from blues to pop to rock and home where he belongs. And that was the early sign of it back then in 71 on that particular album. Man, I thought to myself even then, oh, he's going to do jazz someday. And sure enough, 2003, But Beautiful, which went number one on the jazz charts and really doesn't have to tour at all because he and his wife, Dominique, grow grapes and have their own wine business in the Napa Valley. He's doing okay, but he's touring this year and mostly dates on the West Coast, but we'll let you know. Oh, my gosh, it's so much fun to play Boss Gags. Antonio Carlos Jobim, I don't even have to tell you a whole bunch about him, from his Finest Hour CD, Meditation. Tom Jobim, what a background. January 25th, God rest his soul, he just had a birthday. Born in 1927, passed away December the 8th, 1994, at the age of 67. Drew his influence from Pixing Gunha, who was a modern Brazilian 1930s composer and player. Antonio grew up, and thanks to his mom for this, when Antonio's parents were, him at a very young age, he was an infant, mom and dad split, and mom took him to Ipanema, which was the seaside resort. You know the rest of that story. And dad finally passed away. Mom married. And the stepfather to Tom Jobim was really instrumental in making sure he knew that there was a lot of support going on for him. So, stepfather brought him his first piano. And things just got progressively more and more involved with people's ears turning to this Jobim character who wrote The Girl from Ipanema. So Meditation is what we heard. Joe Sample, Carmel, 1979. Just returned from the jazz cruise. All original compositions on Carmel from back in the day. Abe Laboriel on that CD. Byron Miller, Dean Parks, Hubert Laws, Paul Jackson Jr., Paulino de Costa, and Styx Hooper from the Jazz Crusaders. Joe turns 73 tomorrow, and hopefully he'll be on this show very, very soon. We'll let you know. Yeah, lots of exciting things happening. Let's play something really exciting, shall we? Just a source of pride for Baltimore to be able to know that the Baltimore Jazz Alliance is so healthy, so thriving, and so full of people who subscribe that are just captivating. Like, for example, Bob Jacobson, who you can hear on this track with Phil Revita. This is from the second compilation of BJA's beautiful assembly of jazz talent in the area. This is A Kiss Goodbye. And we're going to hear from Bob shortly on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Ooh, enjoy.
Thank you.
You know what? This particular thing that I do, whatever you want to call what I do, I research, I produce, I make sure that music sounds good next to one another all the time. So I'm doing that every day in anticipation. Sometimes some songs just grab me by the throat and won't let me go. And Bob Jacobson, our guest today, told me about the fact that he was playing on this track from the second Baltimore Jazz Alliance compilation. I had no idea that I would be weeping over my wine listening to this song, so beautiful, and that sax is so incredible, and I was just struck by the keyboard work and the saxophone, and it's all Bob Jacobson, who, by the way, has done more than play sax through the years. Has been a social worker, has been a teacher, a freelance writer, a tour guide. Bob Jacobson, what else do you do?
I think you pretty much covered it right there.
Man! Bob, it is so sweet to have you for a few different reasons, honestly.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I just love the fact that, you know, in coming to Baltimore, because this is, what, a third or fourth time, and now we're here to stay, my son and I, but in getting to know the Baltimore Jazz Alliance and getting to know your name, I never really spoke with you one-to-one, but my God, it's just so amazing to be in Baltimore, to know what the Jazz Alliance has done and is trying to do for jazz, and then to hear all of this great music on these compilations. How did you get involved, first of all, in the Alliance? How did you come to know jazz and love it as you do? And why is it that you wanted to have this little forum today? I want to know everything, and I want to know it now.
Well, I guess I'll kind of work chronologically.
Please.
So I think I was probably about 12 years old when I started listening to jazz up in Rhode Island. Luckily,
oh, wow.
We had an AM station that had jazz every night. I guess that was kind of unusual. And Fred Grady was the name of the DJ.
Oh, I love it.
And it really caught my ear at a time when most of my peers were really listening to the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, the Beach Boys. I mean, I listened to them too and liked them somewhat, but it just didn't move me. Rock didn't move me the way jazz did.
How about
and,
that?
That's how it started. Now, I had an uncle who I found out much later played jazz on saxophone and clarinet, but I never even heard him play until like 1979, something like that. Yeah, so it was mainly through listening to that station that I got hooked.
Yeah,
and I
trust me, I know all about that because we had a great AM station back in Philly, too, that would play jazz along with the other pop stuff. And, you know, they really mixed it really well.
Mm-hmm.
And those AM stations, people that are your age and my age, because I think that we're about the same age, talk about those kinds of growing up situations all the time. That was such a kick to have that station in Rhode Island. Do you know the caller?
Yeah, it's funny. My mother played a lot of music in the house, records, that is, and very little jazz. It was mostly show tunes, pop singers like Jack Jones.
Oh, yeah.
I really liked. Some classical, tiny bit of jazz, but not very much. But like I say, I got it from the radio.
That's funny. And you
yeah.
weren't into, you didn't gravitate to the Beatles and the Stones and the Beach Boys, because
I
know
I
that
said,
time frame.
I listened to it. I liked it somewhat. It just didn't hit me over the head like, or, you know, in the heart the way jazz did. I even, you know, in high school, I had started playing clarinet in sixth grade and saxophone in ninth grade. And in high school, you know, I got into little combos. And, you know, I remember playing some Beatles music and liking it, but we were primarily playing jazz. So I guess I was in the minority, although there was a pretty healthy jazz scene in Rhode Island at the time. And I played in the high school. We had what we called a dance band or stage band. We
yeah.
used the word jazz, but essentially we were playing swing era jazz with a little bit of soloing, improvising.
So did you
yeah,
go to the
started,
Newport Jazz Festival all the time?
You know, I think I started going sometime late in high school. Yeah, maybe around age 17.
And did
yeah,
you see any of the favorites that really stirred you when you started to listen to that AM station?
No, I did not. You know, sometimes people ask musicians who their early influences were. And unlike many people who learn instruments, I didn't really try to pattern myself after anybody. But there were two guys on saxophone I really remember as appreciating. One was Gene Ammons, who primarily played tenor.
Oh, yeah.
And Cannonball Adderley, who played alto.
Oh, my
gosh.
And I
remember, you know, taking this one Cannonball Adderley album out of the Providence Public Library repeatedly. It was live in San Francisco or something. But I didn't see either of them at Newport. No, I remember seeing Louis Armstrong's All Stars and later, they kind of combined a lot of rock with jazz down at Newport, and, you know, I remember seeing Frank Zappa there.
Oh, my gosh.
Sly and the Family Stone, Don Ellis's band, which was pretty innovative in jazz. I honestly forget who I saw the first time I went to Newport, except for Louis Armstrong's All Stars, which made hardly any impact on me at all. But, no, didn't see my favorite artist down there.
I remember it was 67. I don't know if you went this year or not, but Buddy Rich.
Yeah, that would have been around the time I went, yeah.
Yeah, Buddy Rich was on the show, and Joe Williams came to sing to the ladies in the audience. I thought I would. I was young, but I thought I was going to curl up into a ball.
Now, back to your question, jumping ahead many years.
Yeah.
A guy named Barry Glassman started the Baltimore Jazz Alliance here. Actually, what he did was he had moved here from New York and was looking for the jazz and the blues in Baltimore and was having a very hard time finding it. When he finally did, he was amazed by the level of talent that we had here. And also struck by how a lot of the clubs here, both jazz and blues, were really struggling. So he decided to take on this mission of broadcasting to the public where they could hear jazz and blues in Baltimore. So he started a website with a calendar on it of where the live jazz was. Well, shortly after that, there was no organization yet. Shortly after that, he called together anybody who wanted to come who had been to his website. And there was sort of a town hall meeting kind of thing to talk about the state of jazz in Baltimore. And there were musicians there and jazz fans and DJs and PR people and writers and so forth. And as you can imagine, it was sort of a big gripe session, primarily.
Oh.
And at the end of it, I don't know if it was Barry or somebody else said, okay, who wants to do something about this? And I had been kind of griping about the status of Baltimore, jazz in Baltimore for many years. And I thought, okay, it's time to put up and you know, step forward and do something about what you've been griping about for 20 years. And so I got involved with the Jazz Alliance, got on their steering committee, and it's been, I think, 7 years, and I've been vice president of the group for several years.
That's awesome. My gosh.
Yeah. For an all-volunteer, mostly volunteer group, with a relatively small budget, we have, I think we've accomplished quite a bit.
And actually, I have to say that I just got the new newsletter, and something about it is just popping. The February 2012 edition, just popping. There's a lot going on, and there seems to be a renewed energy. And I'm seeing advertising in here that I hadn't necessarily seen before. I'm excited. I think this year's going to be great.
Yeah, I think we had, in this last issue, we had a lot more reviews than usual, and of some acts, some bands that are new to Baltimore. So, yeah, there's kind of some good energy there right now.
Yeah. So along the way, you became a social worker and a writer. So,
right.
What came first in that regard? You left Rhode Island because you're living in this region now.
Right. I actually came to Baltimore to go to graduate school for social work at University of Maryland. Got into that in 1975. Long story short, did that for 32 years. Stopped 4 years ago. I had been playing music a little bit pretty much throughout that time. Sometimes it was just jamming, not actually going out and making money at it. But I usually kept my fingers in it to some extent. And writing, actually, although I did a tiny bit in high school for the newspaper, that actually came... I would say within the last 10 years. I started mainly writing for the website allaboutjazz.com. Mostly book reviews for them. And then some reviews of concerts and CDs, but mostly book reviews. So I'm pretty much a self-taught writer, actually.
I think that's amazing. You never know when it comes to jazz what opportunities are going to come your way. And you got a real cool opportunity because didn't you write for Downbeat?
Well, that was one time.
That's okay.
Unfortunately, this doesn't happen anymore. Downbeat, in each issue, or maybe every other issue, used to profile the jazz scene in a different city each time. And I noticed, this was about, I think this was about 8 years ago, I noticed that they hadn't done Baltimore. And I was pretty familiar, I used to go to a lot of jam sessions, was pretty familiar with what went on here. And I wrote to them and said, hey, you haven't done Baltimore, I volunteer. So they asked me to send it in, and there was a half-page article on aspects of the Baltimore jazz scene. I remember the photo they used was of a sax player named Al Maniscalco, who is now in Chicago, but at the time he was a very active player around here, and he ran a jam session down at Louis Bookstore, which has changed hands a few times since then as various restaurants.
Yes.
And I wrote about that jam session in the article. Yeah, so that was my one foray into Downbeat.
Oh, you know, and I love it when magazines have done that, no matter what the genre, when they focus on different cities and what is happening in your town. That creates such excitement, and it puts people who have done the story and the people they're writing about on the map. I wish they would still do that.
Yeah, that was nice when they were doing that. I think it was about 2 years ago, they actually wrote a piece that touched on Baltimore because they did an article on house concerts and profiled three different areas of the country. One was Atlanta, but they wrote about Jazzway 6004.
Oh yeah,
which is the big house concert venue for jazz in Baltimore.
Yeah, yeah. Oh boy, I don't know how strongly Marianne is into the schedule this year, but now that you've mentioned it, I'm wondering what she's going to do, because I know that she's feeling the renewed energy of what is happening in not only Baltimore, but D.C. And it used to be, Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, but I just feel this way, it used to be that lots of Baltimore folks would go to D.C. Now I'm seeing a lot of D.C. folks coming to Baltimore.
Yeah, I think it flows both ways. I think in D.C., the live jazz there is more concentrated along U Street.
Yeah.
Several clubs there. But, yeah, you definitely have folks coming up here from Washington for some of the jazz anyhow. I know at the Caton Castle, some of the folks in southwest Baltimore, some D.C. folks come up for that.
And guess
then,
what?
You know,
there's going to be more of that, because now
Caton
Castle has a Thursday night jam.
Yeah, it just started.
Yeah,
so
I'm going to go this Thursday to check that out. I'm really feeling strongly about that jam. It's going to be really hot.
Very good. Yeah, I heard they had like 28 people at the last one.
Oh, and, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Todd Marcus took over leadership of it last week, and then it was Tim the week before, and I'm not sure what's going to be happening this Thursday, but I don't think people are caring. They just want to go to hear some real live jazz and some actually A-list regional players come and play because, you know, if you come to Caton Castle, you better know your chops.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you mentioned Tim Green, who is primarily an alto sax player.
Yeah.
It's funny, he is now one of a handful of players who are becoming known nationally and even internationally, who still live in Baltimore.
Oh,
and,
yes. We talk about this frequently. I love
yeah.
that. I just love
yeah.
it. Yeah.
They're based here, and when the call comes to go to France or New York or wherever, they're off, but they still come back.
Yeah. Well, this really is. I mean, I don't know how you feel having lived in Baltimore for a while now, but I'm from Philadelphia, and I just love this town. It just seems like the kind of city that not only just tolerates you, but embraces you. There's mm-hmm. all of these amazing cultures, these amazing neighborhoods, and it's just a blue-collar town that knows how to work hard and play hard.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I've lived here 38 years now, and one of the attractions for me was it was a big city, biggest I had lived in, and, you know, large population, pretty spread out. It just seemed kind of folksy and warm and, you know, very neighborhood-oriented. So not rat-racy at all.
Right.
You know, unlike some big cities. So
you're
right. Very comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. And just, you know, trying to explain to people, because there's a whole lot of people that come to the chat room when the shows are on, and folks who know that I'm doing it from my home. This show is based in Baltimore. When they hear different places like Fells Point or Towson, where there's a sprinkling of some clubs, or what's happening at Caton Castle, or any place you name, it's always... there's always a question like, really, there's a lot of history to Fells Point? Oh my God, is there history to Fells Point? You kidding? It's just really cool to turn people on to a place that they could come to one day and decide that they're not going to leave either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's happening a lot among young artists and entrepreneurs right now. I went to a conference a couple of weeks ago called Create Baltimore. Actually, it was Create Baltimore 2. It was the second one they had.
Oh, how
and,
neat.
And it was primarily people in their 20s who had moved here fairly recently, in the arts, in little startup companies. I was in a workshop on arts funding, and somebody in the workshop asked, how many people here have Baltimore City on their birth certificate? And only three hands went up. This was out of about 30 people,
huh.
And it, primarily young people. And, you know, there's a big influx of people who are into the arts coming here in the last few years. And I think it's partly because we have these arts and entertainment districts that have been created lately in Highlandtown and Station North. And there are galleries and you know, theater, small community theater groups and so forth springing up, and the cost of living here being less than a lot of other cities that are very big in the arts, like New York or D.C. You know.
That's true. And Johns Hopkins University and the hospital and the amazing art museums that we have, a Baltimore Museum of Art, AVAM, the American Visionary Museum, Reginald F. Lewis Museum, the Industry Museum. Oh, my God. It's really amazing. Jeez. What strides have been made in the past, like, say, 20 years. And I have to credit Jim Rouse with some of that, too, because, holy cow, what did we do before Harbor Place? You know?
Yeah, yeah. That did it. That, well, that put Baltimore on the national map.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, boy, I can't say enough about the town.
I have to admit I was one of the naysayers who I think I signed a petition against Harbor Place 30 years ago, and
did you?
Yeah, there was some nice open space. I thought it was nice open space down there, but obviously I wasn't thinking big. And yeah, and I didn't, I remember predicting that it would fail. Just
well,
to tell a story on myself.
Yeah,
obviously,
you were,
boy,
you were
was
not
I
alone.
Wrong.
There
Holy
was a,
cow. Yeah, we had no tourism. We had no tourist industry whatsoever at that point.
That's
30
right.
Years ago. Yeah.
And a lot of the folks, there was a great guy that used to work at WPOC, Jim Conway, who was the traffic reporter. He was from Pigtown. It's not
mm-hmm.
called Pigtown anymore. But he was so against Mayor Schaefer and this whole notion.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, turning back to you and Sounds Good. Tell me about the roots of the group Sounds Good.
Okay. Well, I used to play at Borders Bookstore, the now defunct Borders Bookstore.
Oh, yeah.
When it was in Towson. They had a cafe there called Espresso Cafe on the second floor. And at one point in the early 90s, they started having jazz there every Saturday night year-round, year after year.
Love it.
So I used to play there fairly often with Michael Reitzik on guitar.
Oh, yeah.
And who is still one of the great players in town.
Absolutely.
And, one night he couldn't make it, and I needed a substitute, and through a friend who I played in a big band with, I found out about this guitarist named Ron McCadden, who was from Harford County and played nylon string guitar, sort of in the fashion of Charlie Byrd.
Oh, wow.
And he and I really clicked. We were into the same kind of jazz, and you know, we started playing together at Borders, and then we started looking for other work. And, again, long story short, that was 17 years ago this year.
Mercy.
So, yeah, we called the group Sounds Good, and the size varied depending on the job. Sometimes we would play at Borders with just the two of us, so usually three of us with a bass player. And you know, we've played concerts where we add drums or even another horn. So we've had anywhere from 2 to 5 pieces. And, you know, we have this immense list of places we've played in Baltimore, Columbia, D.C. Actually, the group has been together with various personnel. I'm the only steady one for the last 8 years at Donna's Cafe in Columbia.
Oh,
every
yeah.
Every other Saturday night, we're the band there as a trio.
That's awesome. Well,
and for the last 4 years, that's been Larry Kindling on the bass, who's an excellent bassist from Ellicott City.
Now, when was this compilation, this second Baltimore Jazz Alliance put together? This was just a few years ago, right?
That was either 2000, I think it was 2009. It might have been 2008.
Okay.
Yeah.
So who are the personnel on your song here? Camp Clave?
Yes. Camp Clave. Wait, I'll explain the title in a minute. The personnel, Larry Kindling on the bass, who I just mentioned.
Yep.
Myself on tenor sax. Roland Dorsey on conga drums. And Ron McCadden on guitar.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
Clave,
in case people don't know the word, is the rhythm pattern in Afro-Caribbean music,
mm-hmm.
And particularly Afro-Cuban music. So back in the year 2001, I decided to give myself a gift of going to this Latin jazz camp up in Vermont. It was called Salsa Meets Jazz. It
wow.
was actually not called a camp. It was called a seminar. It was a week-long seminar at Goddard College in Vermont, southern Vermont. And it was taught by Eddie Palmieri, who is one of the masters of Latin music in the U.S., and the seven members of his octet at the time, including Brian Lynch on trumpet and Conrad Herwig on trombone. And all week, the main word we heard all week was clave. Every morning we started with a listening session that Eddie Palmieri taught, where we listened to Afro-Cuban music, and he explained the history of it, and listened to a lot of recordings of his various bands. And, all week this was drummed to us, clave, clave, clave. So later, a little while later, maybe 5 months later, I wrote a tune, and I called it Camp Clave, thinking about this experience.
I love it. And,
yeah.
and the song is so cool. And we're going to play it right now on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. This is Bob Jacobson, our guest, and Sounds Good, Camp Clave. Check this out. Thank you. That was so choice. That is Bob Jacobson, our guest on sax, and his group Sounds Good, and that's Cap Clave. And Bob, I got to tell you, it's so funny how people, when they go back and you immerse yourself in a particular work by an artist, but I love Dexter Gordon so much. And
me too, yeah.
Man, just reading different kinds of opinions and blurbs about the work from 62, Go, and the actually album that Dexter thought was his finest work. And somebody saying, yeah, you know what? It was so good to have that music back then because people were dancing to jazz. And that's what
True.
That song reminded me of, just people getting
yeah.
up and saying, forget it, I'm just getting up. So nice.
It's funny you mentioned Dexter Gordon.
Yeah.
But because I'm putting together a tribute concert to Dexter Gordon now. I hope that it will happen sometime in the spring or early summer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And now, actually, Dexter Gordon's birthday is February 29th, but we were a little leery about doing it then because of possible snow. So we're going to postpone it till the spring or summer. And
excellent.
Hopefully be doing that in Baltimore.
Oh, my gosh. Please keep me informed on that because I am... Just, you know, the different stages of his career and life just set me back. And just such an imposing character. And then to learn about his grandfather, who was one of the Buffalo Soldiers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I had forgotten about that. Yeah.
Yeah. To know about
his
dad. His dad was one of the prominent African-American doctors of his day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
There wasn't a whole lot of them. And you know, his self-imposed exile, going to Paris and Denmark and all, and what's so ironic is he goes there and he misses the civil rights era.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, well, he and a lot of other African-American artists at that time.
Well,
yeah.
and we can't even imagine, but, I mean, with all of the challenges that Dexter faced when he was living in the States, I mean, man, that was, I would have bolted too. But when he came back, I remember the stories, as do you, that he played a venue in New York, and when he played, people would not leave after he finished.
Yeah, his return was quite triumphant, and it was, it's funny, because it was at a time when... jazz was not in great shape here.
Right.
Yeah, when he came back in the 70s, I mean, rock and jazz rock fusion had really taken over. And, yeah, I was a little surprised at what a great reception he got when he came back. And, you know, maybe that actually was sort of a catalyst for jazz growing to a certain extent around that time.
I think so too, because you know, his return was so electric that it got people thinking anew about
mm-hmm.
what it means to delve into jazz the way he honed it. Gosh, I just love him, and I wish I had gotten to know him, and it makes me sad that he passed away in Philadelphia.
Ah, your hometown.
Yeah, yeah. So that's really cool. That's something else to look forward to in 2012. Tell me other good news.
You know, I just want to mention, you know, we've talked a lot about the Jazz Alliance, but I just want to mention that
yeah.
One of the things we've done over the years is we developed a, you know, we looked at the audience, which is similar to the sometimes to the audience for classical music, in that it's rather old, you know, middle-aged and older people.
Yeah.
And they'd call it the graying of the audience. And we, you know, one of our missions in the Jazz Alliance has been to create new audiences. So back in 2006, I think we started, 2005, sorry, we created a program called Jazz for Kids. And we actually aim that primarily at elementary school-age children, just to introduce them to jazz, what jazz is. And also, we have something called a musical instrument petting zoo, where we let the kids try all the instruments that we bring to the concert.
I love it.
The program is very participatory also, where we have the kids and actually their families singing a little bit, doing little rhythms. We invite anybody who wants to come up and try scat singing to do that. We have a little New Orleans parade where we give everybody a little hand percussion instrument and we take them on a little march as they do in New Orleans. We've been doing that for 6 years. We around Baltimore and also in D.C. a little bit. In April, we're going to be doing that again at the Smithsonian American Art Museum in Chinatown.
Oh,
in D.C.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So, you know, hopefully we're making some inroad among young children that will create a little spark there and get them a little bit familiar with jazz, and hopefully they'll continue in that interest.
I just love that because we certainly need to do something creative to instill that kind of vision and inspiration in our kids, because they don't have those jazz studies at school that we took for granted for so long.
Right.
You know, that,
well, not
you know,
usually. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And another thing is that over the last few years, we've been responsible for bringing quite a few jazz groups to Artscape in July, and hopefully we'll be doing that again this year in on the third weekend of July. Yeah,
that's
Artscape
great.
Back in the 80s used to feature nationally known jazz artists as well as local, and I don't know if it's due to budgetary constraints or what, but that has pretty much disappeared. But like I say, over the last few years, we have been instrumental in bringing local jazz artists, at least, back to Artscape, anywhere from 3 bands to 8 bands per year.
Yeah, and I love it. And hopefully the Chick Webb competition still goes on, correct?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know the reason. Last year, that didn't happen. Yeah, as an offshoot, I guess, of the Billie Holiday vocal competition,
yeah,
several years ago, there were so many men entering that they actually created a separate Cab Calloway vocal competition for men. And then as another spinoff, I guess they realized why focus just on vocalists, so they created the Chick Webb competition for instrumental groups.
Man, I love that.
Hopefully that will be back.
I sure hope so, because I really do see that there are younger people who really want to get involved. And actually, while we're on the subject, in the month of February, we're going to have a spokesperson from the musicianship on the program, and we're going to have two members of Afro Blue from Howard University. And
oh,
Afro Blue, you know, didn't win the sing-off, but they were the most buzzed about group that was on that national TV show.
Good.
And the
Good.
Musicianship is a group that was essentially formed by Diane Granger. Are you familiar with them, Bob?
No.
Okay.
Nope, hadn't heard of it.
The late Diane Granger, who was just an amazing drummer herself. Dad is Greg Granger. Uncle is Greg Granger.
Greg and Gary I know of, yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen them, yeah.
Diane, in her short life, made it a point to, she thought of it as her mission. She went out to these neighborhoods where kids wouldn't normally have instruments, and she put them in their hands. And she said, I want you to learn. And the musicianship was created because of her vision. And they're going to have a huge concert in March starring Afro Blue, so that now they are able to go into some schools, and as the money comes in, they'll be able to go into more to be able to renew teaching jazz to kids who are interested.
Very good. Very good.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was recently at the Jazz Education Network convention in Louisville, Kentucky. And that every night at that convention, which was 4 nights, they would have a concert of 4 different bands. the band that started the whole thing off was a group called the Louisville Leopards Percussion Ensemble. The Louisville Leopards were all elementary school kids, grades two through five. And, I mean, they were playing everything from drum set to marimbas and vibes and xylophones. And some of these kids were, these little kids were taking a short solo, improvised solos, quite good.
Wow.
It was really inspiring, I'll tell you. It was an after school program that's been going on since at least 2005. Not an in-school program, but they had, you know, great enthusiasm, great musicianship. It was really inspiring, like I say. So, I think when we familiarize these kids with the music and put instruments in their hands, great things can happen. And that's happening a lot more around the country. I mentioned our group, Jazz for Kids, but there are similar groups growing all over the country from that realization that we need to create a new audience. So, hopefully it'll all lead to the perpetuation of jazz and, you know, some new directions.
Well, hopefully there will be a time very soon because we don't have 24-hour-a-day commercial jazz stations. And the commercial part of that is real important because these sponsors and folks who get endorsements aren't interested until they realize that you can make money for them.
Right.
So if we have a really workable situation where we create even one 24-hour-a-day commercial jazz station encompassing different kinds of jazz, and that works, you're going to see all of these programs come alive because once one is successful, it's like a domino effect. So, Bob, I'm telling you the truth. That's what I'm gunning for.
All right.
Wow, that's so cool that, you know, you had mentioned that, and I forgot about Jazz for Kids. Anytime you're doing any kind of publicity about that, make sure you let me know. I'll make people sick about it on Facebook.
Okay.
Honestly. And
at the moment, the only thing we have on the calendar is April 28th at the Smithsonian.
Okay, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'll get particulars from you, and maybe I'll even create an events page for it so people know.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay. Well, guess what I found this morning, Bob?
The other song you had missed?
I found Espresso Maker Blues.
Ah, okay. Oh, boy. You can't see it, but I'm turning red.
Listen, that is the coolest song. you have to tell people.
This refers back to the years I mentioned that we were playing at Borders, and that was a really pleasurable experience for us. We played there for about 5 or 6 years, and you know, it was from 8 to 10 on Friday nights, smoke-free environment before that was mandatory.
Right.
And, you know, everything was really nice, except for one thing. The the noises that the latte machine would make while we were trying to be expressive and play these great solos and so forth. Anyway, so very noisy machine. And then the clerks there would, I noticed at a certain point, in addition to that noise, the clerks would be banging something really loud on the counter, and I found out it was these huge coffee filters that they were knocking the coffee grounds out of. Anyway, I put that all into a song called Espresso Maker Blues, and that's what ended up on the album from the Baltimore Songwriters Alliance. And I sing very infrequently, maybe once every year or two, but I sang on that one as well as playing saxophone.
Well, in all honesty, it reminded me, because I'm old enough to remember this, but it reminded me of the throwback to the beatnik days when people were grooving, yeah, man, and had poetry grooves. And these comedians that were really hot back in the 60s, it just has that whole vibe to it. But you know what? I couldn't figure out from CD Baby, where I got this, couldn't figure out what the aggregation is. Is this Sounds Good?
Yes. Actually, it's Ron McKedden on nylon string guitar, myself on vocal and saxophone, tenor sax, and a bass player named Tom Hensler, who is from Fork, Maryland.
Oh, yeah.
And we actually recorded it in his studio.
Oh, my goodness. Well, this is a moment right here on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Bob Jacobson is our guest, and this is his group, Sounds Good, Espresso Maker Blues. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Was perfect. Jazz with Java on the side. The audience was even listening. It was all so dignified. The guitar and bass were cooking. I got ready to play my sax. When from the back I heard such a noise, I thought we were under attack. It was grinding and hissing, whirring and a buzzing. I thought that I was in a bad dream. But to make those lattes, so they said, we've got to steam the cream.
Louder.
Yeah. It came through pretty loud and clear.
Yeah. That was actually Tom Hensler doing that with his mouth, let's say.
Oh, bless his heart. Bless his heart.
That does kind of have a hipster, early hipster vibe to it, yeah.
It really does. It just put a smile on my face. And I went through a whole lot of grief with CD Baby to get this. I want you to know, but I was determined.
I'm not surprised. I guess David Frischberg is one of the prime examples of one of the few examples of somebody who writes humorous jazz tunes. And there aren't enough out there, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
So this was sort of an attempt to take a darkly humorous subject and put it to music.
And the subject matter, you know, is not necessarily life and death, but for
right.
those
Clearly.
Folks, right, who are performing in a scenario where you want your people to pay attention to you, there's nothing worse than getting into the vibe and all of a sudden,
yeah. I'm probably exaggerating, but I think we hear those latte maker sounds most often when we're playing romantic ballads.
It's of course.
Awful.
Oh, my gosh. What a trip. I'm so tickled that you had the time to do this. I really am.
I love your enthusiasm. Well, we need more of it.
Well,
I'm doing all I can.
Matter of fact, we just got the letter, those of us who are involved in the Baltimore Jazz Alliance, and it went forth to everyone saying, look, let's see what we can do this year to enlist more of your help. So I'm telling you this, Bob, my hand is raised if you want somebody to update that Facebook Baltimore Jazz Alliance page.
All right, very good.
Okay yeah, because there are so many folks who are coming to this area or outside of the perimeters of this area. Shoot, the whole purpose of us being involved in this is to make sure that we throw monetary support where we can to these artists. So anything that we can do, you know?
Yeah, terrific.
Yeah. So what's next for you? What are you going to do? Tell me where can people go to find out information about you? Your MySpace?
Yeah, MySpace.com/ Bob Jacobson Jazz. And Jacobson is JACOBSON. So
and
MySpace.com/ Bob Jacobson Jazz.
Or you can
Bob
just
Jacobson
go to MySpace and put in the name. And
yeah,
while we're
true.
On the subject of MySpace, homage must be paid today because one of the new people who has major stock in MySpace is Justin Timberlake, and it's his birthday today.
All right.
Yes. So you will see MySpace being retooled. And everybody out here who's snickering right now about MySpace, guess what? It's going to be the new groovy thing this year.
All right. Yeah. All right. I tell
that
you,
is
you know,
awesome.
I have to admit, I'm not as familiar with Justin Timberlake's music as I should be. But I saw him on Saturday Night Live, and I was really impressed with him as a comic actor.
Honestly.
He is very good. He is really good, yeah.
And him teaming up with Lady Gaga was one of the funnier things I've seen.
Uh-huh, right.
It was great. And so are you. I love the way you play saxophone, Bob. Whether it's up tempo or whether you slow it down on that Phil Revita track, oh my God. So I really want to come out and see you, and I want you to create more opportunities where that's going to happen.
All right. Thank you. Yeah.
thank you.
I hopefully will be doing a house concert in late April in honor of Duke Ellington's birthday.
Oh, great.
Of all Ellington music in my own home in Pikesville. Myself, Derek Thompson on piano, and a guest vocalist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's a beautiful thing. We'll have to keep in touch in regard to that and maybe have an in-the-round thing where we can get a few folks to talk about it on the show.
Okay, great.
That would be awesome. Bob Jacobson, thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you, and we'll be talking soon.
Okay, very good.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, thanks.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That is so cool. I love this. Maybe a little tribute to Duke Ellington and another tribute to Dexter Gordon. Man, the possibilities of that are pretty staggering. And you just don't know what kind of offshoots there are going to be because of this show today. Because, honestly, I'm feeling the vibe already. And some of the artists that you hear in the show are coming expressly to promote different kinds of events. Real special outings, and the next artist that we have on Thursday is exactly what I'm talking about. A multimedia artist, just like Randy Everett that we played during the show. This is Roy Cross, very respected, and he's doing an event coming up in the next 2 weeks at Andy Musique, just as where Verano was a week or so ago. So hopefully you'll have an opportunity to hear his music, and I'll just let it be a surprise. It's not just necessarily about saxes or guitars or keyboard or bass. There's a lot more music than meets the eye out there, and that's all I'm going to say. I appreciate everybody who is in the chat room today. Kim, thank you for coming here today. And Griselda and all of the folks who wish to remain anonymous. My name is Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz lives, and we're going to be hearing more of it in 2012, and I think you'll like everything. Thanks so much for joining us. God bless you. We'll see you on Thursday with our new permanent 3-hour show.